Up next, our third Who's Behind the Secret Door guest. Let's see if I can figure out who that person may be when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Who's Behind the Secret Door. Let's open up the door. Come on in, guest. How are you?
Yes, I'm very nice, Mr. Moore. How are you yourself, sir?
It sounds like Winston Churchill, but he's not with us anymore.
No, it's not Winston.
You also sound like Mrs. Doubtfire.
Exactly.
Well, let's see. I'm gonna just say hello to me.
Hello.
Okay, I'm gonna guess you're a male. Am I right there?
No, I suppose so.
Okay. Gosh, I'm picturing you. I know you. Do you deal with paranormal topics?
Yeah, sometimes, Mr. Norrie.
Oh, man, this one's tough. You're good. You're good. Do you use this voice once in a while?
Never. Only for very selected people and on rare occasions, thank you.
You know what? I'm going to throw it in the hat. I don't know who you are. The towel is in.
L.A. Marzulli.
L.A.? Unbelievable. That is great. I mean, everybody's good, but there was no way I would have guessed who you were.
Oh, that's really fun.
The expert in the trilogy and the Nephilim, my there buddy L.A. Marzulli. How are you?
I'm good, sir, and yourself?
I'm good. Everything's cooking along. And what's going on, first of all, with your personal life? You were burned out of your house during one of the fires. Have you settled in now? You were in where, Oklahoma or somewhere?
Yeah, we moved to Oklahoma. It's a great place. It's you know, we're up and running again. The business is back up, and I'm editing a new film on DNA and working on another book. So that's all good, and we needed a place to land. And just sort of like recoup. I mean,
sure.
It's just devastating. When we got up there, people have no idea. It's like our lives were utterly erased. I mean, completely erased. Nothing left at all. Nothing. 3,000 books and all of our little mementos and pictures of the kids. I mean, it's just all gone. So this gives us a landing place. But we bought a used 28-foot trailer RV for like $4,000 and parked it up on the property. Everything works in it. And we've been going back and forth, and I actually drew up the plans for a new house. It's a gigacrete house. And for any of those out there who are listening to this and have a burnout or in a fire zone and about to build, this stuff's amazing. It's a company out of Las Vegas. It's called Giga, G-I-G-A, Gigacrete. And it's basically fireproof. It's steel studs and then this rigid foam, which goes in between the studs. And then what they patented is it's like a stucco on the inside and the outside, 1,700 degrees for 4 hours before the thing fails. It's unbelievable. So why would I want to use wood products or anything wood to rebuild up there? It's state of the art. The insulation is 6 inches thick because it's rigid foam, and it's like they can make anything that you design essentially. So it's not like a stamped little house or something like that because I designed it. I drew up the plans for it, and we're in plan check. We've just got to get fire approval, and then we're actually in plan check. So we hope to start breaking ground sometime in February. We'll see what happens.
Well, I'm glad you're getting back on your feet. And of course, if disaster wasn't enough, then you lost your partner and dear friend, Richard Shaw.
You know, Rick and I did 11 films together. It was a great romp, and we parted when we finally, sort of ended the series or whatever. We had lunch once a week. And stayed in contact with each other constantly and emailed. And once you get on the phone with Richard, it was never a 5-minute conversation. It was an hour. I miss him. In fact, we took his widow, Mary, out to dinner when we were just back in California last Monday. And it was great to see her. And, just kind of, I'm still processing it. It's a lot of loss in one year.
Yeah, it's not easy. Was his death sudden, or was it something you expected? Okay.
It completely just bam. I mean, he called me at 5 o'clock that evening, and you know, I'm in the hospital. What's going on, Rick? And I prayed for him, and he sounded really weak. And when the doctor came in and told Mary, they basically, the doctors came in and said, if you have anything to say to each other, because he might not come out of this. I mean, that was, that's how dire it was. And that was based on some of the x-rays they did in the CAT scan. And they went in and opened them up. It was supposed to be like an 8-hour surgery. They opened them up, and they never even got to it. He just passed away right on the operating table.
How sad.
So, yeah, Mary called me at 11:30, and, you know, it's hard to believe. It really is.
I lost a friend December 27th of last year to a prescription overdose. Like Art Bell did, a bad combination of prescription pills. And
sorry to hear that.
It was just, you know, a foolish way for him to go by being, I don't want to say he was careless, but he should have realized what he was doing. It's you're right about that loss. There's a hole that's in us for a long, long time.
Yeah. I mean, eventually it heals, but it's always kind of there. And it hasn't, you know, it's only been not even 6 months from Richard. So there's not a day that goes by I don't think about him, or especially since I'm working on this new DNA film.
Right.
He's all over it.
Yeah, tell us about this film.
Well, the reason why I made it is a couple of reasons. It's like we realized that we never really had a fair shake with the press conference that we did in the reveal. And other people have, like, kind of piggybacked on our work without really, you know, Richard or I or anybody else was saying, hey, that's great. So what we wanted to do was set the record straight, and that's what this film is about. It's sort of like an anthology from 2013 to 19. And I've actually got new interviews with the medical doctors who actually look at the skulls. We're talking about the Peruvian elongated skulls.
Yeah.
And basically state on the record, emphatically, George, I mean emphatically, they state on the record, they look right at the camera holding up the model or the molds that Joe Taylor has made for us, the one-to-one molds, look at the camera and say, this has to be genetic. There's no way that this is cranial deformation or cradle headboarding. So that was one of the reasons. But the other reason is like almost every 2 to 3 weeks or once a month there's a new article somewhere that somebody sends me. It's on Scientific America or Nat Geo or whatever, you know, showing a skull someplace in Austria or the Middle East or Russia or wherever, elongated skull, and they immediately go to cranial deformation, cradle headboarding. Immediately, that's what it is, and they do this whole deal, and I'm sitting there going, wait a minute, guys, you know, turn the skull over. Where's the position of the foramen magnum? How do you know it's cranial deformation or cradle headboarding? You don't know. And so what's interesting is it's when you have an anthropologist that's been schooled in this, they'll just say, because they've been taught this, oh, it's cradle headboarding, and they give they parrot the party line, essentially. But when you show the same artifact, the same skull, to a trained surgeon or a medical doctor, which is what we do in the film, they just look at you and start laughing. It's like, there's no way you can do this. This is genetic. And this is why it's so important to get the DNA evidence out there, because our DNA evidence showed that it was Middle Eastern or Eastern European, that those are the haplogroups. We've never been able to get nuclear DNA, although there was one company in the UK who allegedly went over and took samples from this one skeleton called Waki, and I've been trying to track it down, and I can't. It's like the documentary has vanished. It's no longer there.
That's weird.
And I don't know who did it, but they took the samples and had them processed, and they were able to obtain nuclear DNA, and what it came back was unknown primate. And boy, if anyone's out there listening, knows what I'm talking about there, I'm willing to pay for the scientific study and the results and everything else, because if that's true, that's sort of the coup de grace, as it were, with this whole thing.
What would the late Lloyd Pye have said about this?
You know, it's interesting. Chase Kosky took that skull, and she did extensive DNA testing on it. And according to Chase's results, this was just a Native American skull. So it's completely opposite of what Pye was saying. And I never talked to Lloyd. I did speak to one of his co-workers or his partner, whatever. And she was very great. She actually came on my show a couple of times, and we discussed the elongated skulls. You know, Melba Ketchum and I have talked about all this. with her research and her DNA evidence, and that's, to me, it all kind of goes back into the same wheelhouse with the Nephilim, and that's what we're looking at. There's some sort of outside agency that's genetically manipulating human beings to some end. And what's interesting about this whole thing with these skulls, George, especially the Paracas skulls down in Peru, but in other places, they're all over the Americas also. They're there for a period of time, and then it all goes away. They just vanish. They just completely disappear from history. No vestige. All of a sudden, they're just gone, and no one knows why. It's like the Anasazi. There's a lot of theories, but no one knows why they disappear. Just like the Mound Builders. That's the first three films in the new series on the Trail of the Nephilim. They talk about these huge mounds and all this mathematical equations that are embedded in the mounds, and we're talking like, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands of tons of earth, for crying out loud, being moved, and an 18-and-a-half-year lunar cycle, and it's very complicated. But it all just goes away, and no one knows what happened to these, whoever did them, whoever built this stuff, no one knows where they went.
Well, with L.A. Marzulli, who is our third secret guest behind the secret door, and I missed who he was, so I ended up tonight 1-for-2, and normally I'm 2-for-1, but God, that was good. That was, you would have tricked a lot of people. Let's talk a little bit about the Bible, LA, and Genesis. You've studied it, you've researched it. In your opinion, who were the Nephilim? Who were the fallen angels?
Excuse me. The Nephilim are the illegitimate progeny of the fallen angels and the human women of Earth, creating a hybrid being. And there's a reason for this. And it's right there in plain sight. It's screaming at us. Most people don't know it. In the Genesis narrative, there's this mandate which comes down. And I believe it's the pre-incarnate Christ who is saying to the dragon or the serpent that is in the garden with Adam and Eve. And I realize people go, oh, my gosh, that's just mythos. How are you? Blah, blah, blah. But we don't, you know, we don't know what it is. It's there. And there's a mandate that comes down. And it's this. It says, your seed, your offspring, pointing at the dragon, the seed of the dragon, the offspring of a dragon, will be at war, at enmity with the offspring, the seed of the woman. He will crush the dragon's head. You will bruise his heel. And that sets up the rest of the biblical prophetic narrative. And unless we understand Genesis 3:15, that's just an address, then we really don't understand what's going on when we get three chapters later over to Genesis 6. What's happening is that the dragon knows that someone is coming who's going to take his kingdom away from him.
Right.
And this is where it goes off the rails for a lot of people, because there's this secret cosmic war that's been going on in an unseen dimension, literally for millennia, and continues right up into modernity. But it doesn't manifest in the way that most people think it does, but it's here and it's ongoing. And someone did come and defeated the dragon 2,000 years ago on Calvary. But the deal is this: the dragon knows someone's coming. So his strategy is, well, I'll just pollute the genome, I'll just contaminate the genome, and he won't be able to manifest. The seed of the woman will never bear this person, this man, who will crush my head, who will take my kingdom from me. And this is why it gets into this whole, once we come to an understanding of Genesis 3, then when we get to Genesis 6 and the Nephilim and the fallen angels, when we get to Noah's flood, the Tower of Babel, Sodom and Gomorrah, the five kings that Abraham goes after, and finally the conquest of Canaan by Joshua and Caleb, it all makes sense. Without that, the God of the Old Testament becomes this malicious, capricious, maniacal, rapacious, murdering God that favors one tribe over another. And that's not what's going on at all.
No, not at all. What about the devil? Where does the devil fit in here?
Well, you know, when you say that word, it instantly conjures up in people's mind a guy in a red suit with a pitchfork. You know, it's just,
right, with horns.
Exactly, with horns. And that's where most people go. What we're looking at is a super scientist, someone who's incredibly brilliant, but nevertheless a created entity. And through the protocols of the heavenly war, he rebelled. For whatever reason, he rebelled.
Was he an ET?
No,
he was not. Okay.
Well, wait a second. You know, let's define that. An ET, an extraterrestrial, anything not from this Earth is an extraterrestrial. So yeah, He's an extraterrestrial.
All right. Well, all
So
right.
we can use that.
But I guess I meant another planetary system.
No, I don't think so. I think
okay.
he's a created being. In fact, he once was the cherub that covered. He was the most out of the whole angelic host. He was the highest, according to the biblical narrative. And I realized that most people, it's like, oh, that's just mythos. They're just making this stuff up. But what if it's true? What if we have evidence of it? That's why we're on the trail, to show that there is evidence of this tampering of genetics between something that's not human and something that's human. And what's really interesting, our work, and Richard and I did this, it gets into the whole abduction phenomenon. It gets into the people who are taken, who see hybrids that have that are forced to mate with hybrids. I mean, it gets into this whole thing. And there's a prophecy, again, from the biblical narrative, which says, in the latter days, their seed will mingle with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave to them. And that's a mysterious little scripture that's just been laying there literally for about 2,500 years. And the book of Daniel ends, seal up this book to the time of the end. Many will run to and fro over the face of the earth, and knowledge will increase. That's a prophecy in itself. So that's being fulfilled today. We now run to and fro over the face of the earth. Knowledge increases exponentially every 6 months. But that little verse in there, they will mingle their seed with the seed of men. So it can't be men. It's got to be something else. But they will not cleave to them. This is the work of Jim Williamson. The word cleave is the same word that we get back in the Genesis account, given in marriage. So the Nephilim, the fallen angels, came, and they were given, and they took wives. So there was a marriage contract. But then it doesn't happen in the latter days, in the end times, which is exactly what we see with the hybrid program. There's no marriage. People were taken, sperm is taken, ovum is taken, hybrids are created. I mean, Dr. David Jacobs will certainly back me up on that, that they are living, walking amongst us.
That's true. Do you think that the Bible is something spiritual and religious, or is it more of a playbook of what the Earth happened, how it happened, how we were formed, and things like that?
I call it the guidebook of a supernatural. Bible just means book. And what it really is a guidebook to the supernatural. It tells us, it's a playbook. It tells us what's going on, what's happening, and it's really a love story, because what it really comes down to is the God of the universe, the creator of everything. Native Americans would call him the creator, but the God who created everything is trying to reconcile all of humankind back to him. And that's what the book is really about. But in the midst of that, there's this incredible war that's going on in the heavenlies. And we know that at some point in time, Michael and his angels fight with the devil and his angels, and they're cast to earth. And it says, woe to the inhabitants of earth, because the devil and his angels are cast down, you know, to you. And the devil is really angry, because he knows his time is short. And that's a 3-hour conversation. But that has not happened yet. But when it does, oh my gosh, I mean, what does that look like? And of course, there's a lot of speculation for those of us who travel in this. But the more I study it, and I've been studying it for 39 years, the more I'm just amazed. It's like another layer of the onion. It's endless. It's just unbelievable what's in there.
Give us your website, LA.
It's lamarzulli.net, www.lamarzulli.net. And check out our stuff, books, DVDs, all sorts of cool things.
When do you think the DNA movie will be done?
I'm trying to get it done before Christmas. We'll see what happens. I don't want to rush it through.
No, that's pretty aggressive. You're only a couple months away.
Yeah, it's you know, I'll let you know as soon as it comes out.
Huh.
We're getting close.
Okay, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment with L.A. Marzulli and take phone calls as we talk about the Nephilim and strange-looking creatures with big heads and so much more. Jump on board. It's our final segment just ahead on Coast to Coast AM. L.A. Marzulli with us. And don't forget to like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you. We're back with our final segment with L.A. Marzulli. He was our third mystery guest, and of course, I did not catch him. You did a great. Have you been an actor at all?
No, just around the house.
Back to the calls. Cornelius is with us in Louisiana. Right, hey, Corny, go ahead.
Hey, yeah, George, I'm Corny. All right, L.A. Golly, I tell you, you got me even, L.A., because I've been going along with this secret door thing, too, and I couldn't guess any of them. But, L.A., I got to tell you, the quick story, which I always tell you. When I ordered my stuff from you, of course, you were still in California. Your house hadn't burned down or anything.
Mm-hmm.
On my birthday, January 5th, I got all the stuff I ordered, books and DVDs and stuff like that. And that's one memory of mine that I'll keep as long as I can, is that I got all my stuff on my birthday.
Wow.
And you said I sent you too much money.
That's Cornelius. Appreciate it.
All right, L.A., God bless you. Hey, L.A., do you mm-hmm. think the mark of the beast is coming? Because like in Sweden, they're accepting these microchips in their hands, and that's my question for you. So God bless you, L.A.
God bless you too, Cornelius.
Good guy.
You know, George, we Richard and I and the late Dr. Roger Lear, it's hard to believe that he's gone also.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you know Rosemary Ellen Guiley?
No.
She was a great paranormal researcher. I've known her since 1996 from my local St. Louis Nighthawk show, and she passed away of cancer just several months ago.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Wow.
But anyways, back to him and the Mark of the Beast. What do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, I remember this is years ago, and I saw Dr. Roger Lear at a MUFON meeting in Southern California, and I went up to him and introduced myself. My first book, Nephilim, had just come out. Barry Chambish's book on Nephilim, and that's why I went down there to meet Barry. And someone introduced me to Dr. Roger Lear. And I knew about him. I'd been to his website and was anxious to meet him. And there he is. And I go, I understand, you know, you've taken out an implant. He goes, yeah, you want to say it? And I go, sure. He reaches into his coat pocket and pulls out this little plastic vial and wiggles it in front of my face, and they open up your palm of your hand, and he just dumps the thing in the palm of my hand. I'm sitting here looking at this little implant going, you've got to be kidding me. And of course, years later, Richard and I would take out an implant from what became patient 17, but that was really our work. And that's another story. But the reason why I think the implants are the mark, I think they're prototypes. I think what they do is something far more nefarious than an RFID chip, way more. It'll change the host's DNA. And I think right now that they're prototypes right now. Although the last one he did, number 18, or the one right after, the one we took out was pretty much the last one, but the one 16, that which he took out, number 16, you couldn't cut it with a diamond tip saw. He had to take it to a lab and cut it with a laser beam. That's how, you know, hard this thing was. So the one we took out was about 40 years old because Bill, not his real name, was taken, abducted when he was about 5. And when we got a hold of him, he was 45. So the thing had been in there for 40 years. And as you know, when we went to take it out, it like vanished. It wasn't there. And we knew it was there. We did CAT scans and x-rays and ultrasounds and everything else, but when we went to take it out, it wasn't there. So I think whoever is doing this has spent an enormous amount of time and energy. This is the most secret program that's ever come down the pike, as it were, but I honestly think it's a DNA changer.
It could be. Let's go to Bridget in Springfield, Missouri. Welcome to the show. Hi, Bridget. Go ahead.
Hi, George. It's an honor to speak to you and to your wonderful guest.
Thank you.
I'm fascinated because a few years ago, I watched a show called Shepherd's Chapel Network. Have you ever heard of it?
I have not. How about you, L.A.?
No. What was it called again?
Shepherd's Chapel Network. It's a satellite network out of Gravett, Arkansas.
Okay.
And the pastor was a former Marine, George, fabulous guy, had been at the Chosin Reservoir. And he was saying, he's dead now, but his children still operate the network. And he was saying things very similar to what you're saying, Mr. Marzulli. I am utterly fascinated. And it opens up the whole Bible. Why do we have the story of Abraham protecting his lineage, of Isaac marrying Rebecca, not the people of the land? Why does Jacob have to go back to Rebecca's brother to get his wife? Why does Tamar marry Judah?
Right, exactly.
That story.
Exactly. Yeah.
Do you follow all the way down the line? It's to protect Jesus Christ's sacred bloodline so it doesn't get contaminated. Think of the Susanna story in Daniel.
Yep, yep.
The guy's trying to please the daughter of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Follow me?
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Amazing what you're saying. And so all these stories are misinterpreted.
Well, that's the important part. How do you interpret everything in the Bible, L.A.?
Well, I look at everything first literally. I mean, unless it's an obvious metaphor. I'm a biblical literalist. So, you know, when it talks about, let's say, Jesus walking on water, that's literal. And I realize that defies gravity and laws of physics. But when I'm a literalist. When it says that he comes in the clouds riding on a white horse and his feet descend and touch the Mount of Olives and that splits in two, as crazy as that sounds, as a literalist, I believe it's going to happen. So that's how I approach the entire work.
Let's go to Walt in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Walter, hello there.
George, yeah, as always, it's an honor to be on with you, George.
Thank you, Walt.
Needless to say. Mr. Marsulli, I don't know if you're aware of the fact I'm one of George's resident atheist agnostics, and I would love to debate you and perhaps Mr. William Bean as well. I don't know if we want to get into it tonight, but I think that, you know, as George knows, as I've often stated, when the Bible was written, there were no telescopes, no microscopes, no real science, no science of psychology. They really didn't understand the human mind, the way they thought. So I just think that taking the Bible literally or taking the Quran literally or any of these other holy books is just ridiculous,
Go ahead, Ellen.
Let me address that. First of all, the biblical narrative is the only book. You mentioned the Quran. The Quran doesn't have the prophecies that the Bible has. And the biblical prophetic narrative written by 66 books, 40 authors, and yet there's this prophetic thread that goes from the beginning to the very end, in other words, from Genesis to Revelation. And that prophecy, for instance, I'll just give you one. You know, you talk about that it's a bunch of hooey. It talks about, and this is one very specific one, and it's called out, again, with great specificity. It says, in the latter days I will regather you, talking about Israel, from the four corners of the earth and reestablish you in your ancient homeland, never to be moved out of that again. Now, you can dismiss that, or you can come up with all sorts of excuses as to why that happened. But it did happen in the last century, right after World War II. So, you know, 1948, 1949, pivotal years. And this is on the ashes of the Holocaust, where if Hitler had gotten his way, there'd be no Jew left on the planet. And that's a three-hour discussion. So prophecy is real. Prophecy is literal. And, you know, I would say with all due respect that if you're ignorant of biblical prophecy, I would start there, because people like yourself who are agnostic and look at this stuff and go, this is all a bunch of hooey. When you start looking at the prophecies that are there, just the prophecies concerning Jesus' crucifixion and death, the odds of that happening to one man, and remember, this is written thousands of years before his advent, before he comes here, and yet they're very specific, exactly what happens to him. There's like 24 prophecies or 21 prophecies fulfilled in a 24-hour period. The odds of that are like trillions to one. So something's going on here. Something's going on here.
Something very real.
Yeah, I agree. Very real.
Next up, Mike's in Colorado. Welcome to the program, Michael. Go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. It's first of all, I just want to say it's such an honor to be on the Secret Door Show. I've listened to the replays for years, George. So
thank you, Mike.
So much for having me. First of all, L.A., I have actually two questions. One is the recent uptick in paranormal UFO interests, such as the Storm Area 51 event. Do you think that we will ever have an event where people get serious about disclosure instead of kind of chickening out at the last minute, so to speak? And also, I just have to ask you, when we look at these wildfires, such as the one you experienced in Malibu, do you think that there could be any contribution from global warming that is causing these wildfires and upticks in temperatures? And thank you for taking my call, George.
Sure thing. Thank you, Mike.
Well, let me do the wildfire thing first. First of all, they were spraying over the Santa Monica Mountains every single day last year. I mean, every single day.
Every day.
Of the summer.
Yeah.
Every day. It was unbelievable. And if it's true that these things are accelerants, and if it is aluminum that they're spraying, that is an accelerant. I mean, that place went up like a blowtorch. There's just no doubt about it, like a blowtorch. But, you know, California, you know, complains about stuff. And what's amazing is they used to do controlled burns. They don't do that anymore. They used to have cut swaths through the mountains, fire breaks. They don't do that anymore. So they haven't managed the forest. Trump was right when he said that. They have not managed the forest the way they used to. And I think that's problematic, getting into the whole UFO disclosure thing. It's being rolled out. I mean, Tucker Carlson, for the last, since 2017, about every 3, 4, 5 weeks, whatever, has someone else on talking about disclosure. Luis Elizondo dropped a bomb, and I used this at Steve Quayle's conference at the Gen 6 conference up in Branson.
Branson, Missouri. How was that? How was that attended?
That was unbelievable. 3,000 people, and it was just incredible, George. So
perfect.
It was an honor to be there. But what people don't understand is Luis Elizondo gets up and says right on camera, and since he said that on Tucker Carlson show, it's been, you know, slowly kind of dribbling out of the mainstream media, whatever, that they are testing debris from crashed UFOs. I mean, they've got it and they're testing it. That's the second rung on the disclosure ladder. So what's next? I mean, you know, is someone going to come up with a skinny Bob photo? Like Richard and I and Bob Williams debunked that. We thought it was Bob Williams thought it was CGI, very cleverly done, but nonetheless CGI. But what if they come up with a real skinny Bob photo or a video where the thing is actually real? And I think that's the next step. If the cat's already out of the bag, from the government right on down, it's a whole different deal than what it was. You know, George, we were tinfoil hat people, right? And now we're mainstream. So how does that work?
And that video of the Navy Tic Tac, that's amazing.
That is amazing. That's unbelievable. And that's been played all over on every, you know, CNN, Fox News, I mean, every ABC, NBC, it's everywhere. So the cat's out of the bag, as they say, and that's the first rung on disclosure, where Commander David Schraver, former Navy F-18 pilot, states unequivocally on Tucker Carlson that whatever this was not from this world. Underline that, because that's huge.
L.A., we've only got a couple minutes left, and I want you to get your website out and tell folks about what you're doing and any conferences coming up for you.
Just the big one in January with you, George, the Alien Snow Fest. That's going to be a real
fun. I'm looking forward to that. We're going to have some fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
And how about your website? Yes.
The website is www.lamarzulli.net, lamarzulli.net, and our new series is called On the Trail of the Nephilim, and there's three offerings in it: the Mysterious Mound Builders, Mathematical Mysteries of the Mound Builders, and the last one, Secrets of the Supernatural Voices from the Other Side, all dealing with the very enigmatic, mysterious mound builders that did these edifices from the Great Lakes all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico.
Jersey Doug with us. Doug, we've only got 40 seconds left, but let's hear your question. Go ahead.
I'll be as quick as I can, yes. You were speaking earlier about the Nephilim. In the book of Enoch, it says it makes reference of brother of Enoch having a brother Esau. It doesn't say if it's a younger or older brother, but he was described as a man being that twice of the size of a normal man, covered mostly in hair, and preferred to hang with the other animals of the woods rather than the village people. That were, you know, where he was originally.
Sounds
from.
Like a Bigfoot, doesn't it, L.A.?
Yeah, it does. It does. Absolutely.
Same kind of thing. L.A., thanks for being on the program.
Thank you,
appreciate
George.
It.
Appreciate it. Take care.
You did a great job stumping me. I got one right, two wrong, and we do this once a year or so, Who's Behind the Secret Door, and I really looked forward to it. I'm going to be in Chicago this weekend at the Chicago Health Show. Full events in our events or in our Cartwheel at coasttocoastam.com. Come on out and see us. For Michael Cosio, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Banal, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.